Please stand by. Good day, everyone, and welcome to today's IBM Processor Value Unit and Subcapacity Licensing Announcement Overview conference call. Today's call is being recorded. At this time, for opening remarks and introductions, I would like to turn the call over to Mr. Roger Kerr. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you, Brendan. And good afternoon or good morning, depending on where you're from. As Brendan said, my name is Roger Kerr, and I am part of a team that not only consists of my organization, which is the Software Business Strategy, but also the Software Group Pricing and the Passport Advantage teams that work to develop the distributed software licensing metrics and pricing structure that you're familiar with. And then we'll take you through some of the announcements that we've just made here in just a few moments. But first, I want to take a moment and make sure you know where to get the charts. So if you know how to go directly to the internal subcapacity licensing webpage, go there. For those of you who aren't quite sure how to do that, if you go to the Software Sellers Workplace and click on the Extreme Leverage tab, on the right-hand side, you're going to see the link for Passport Advantage. If you take that link, it takes you to a main Passport Advantage page, and on the right side under General Program Information, you'll find a link to the Subcapacity Licensing in Passport Advantage. If you take that link, it takes you right to that Subcapacity Licensing webpage, the internal webpage, and on the right-hand side of that page, if you click on IBM Subcapacity Resources for IBM Sellers, that will take you to the page where you can get the charts. The charts are going to be down toward the bottom of that first screen where it says Training for April 7th, 2009 Announcement. There's a link in that paragraph which will get you the charts. Also, I'd like to introduce some of the other folks who are on the call to help me with the question and answer session that will come up a little later. From the Software Group Pricing Team, we have Steve Salaveria and Rajan Krishnamurthy, and expect to be joined by Carlos Belak in a few minutes. And from the Passport Advantage team, we have John Maurer. So if you go ahead and move to slide 2, the agenda, take you through a little background of what we see happening in the marketplace today that is important from a software licensing perspective and led to some of these announcements you're going to hear about. Then we'll talk about the announcement of the PBU requirement for the new, the latest Xeon processor technology from Intel. This is the one that has been codenamed in the trade press Nehalem, and it was introduced a couple weeks ago and is a very fast processor core. And then we'll move on to the subcapacity licensing announcements we made a week ago, which were actually fairly extensive and also involved some change to our terms and conditions. So we're in the process of sending a letter to all of our Passport Advantage customers, and we'll talk a little bit about that letter and tell you how you can see a copy of it. And then we'll end the formal presentation portion of the call with a little bit of a competitive view of Oracle and some recent changes they've made and emphasize some of the advantages you have not only with our licensing structure but with our bottom line price here in IBM. And then we'll open it up for questions and answers. So let's start by moving to slide 3 and talk about the three elements that we see that are really important in the marketplace today that impact software licensing. First, you should be aware that in the x86, the PC server space, we're seeing most of the servers coming out now moving from dual-core chips to quad-core chips. So automatically, without making any other changes, they're doubling the number of the cores in these servers. And, of course, if your customer doesn't plan for it, they could see their software cost double or more. So that's one important thing happening. The second is that with the introduction of this new Xeon chip, codenamed Nehalem, that we'll be talking about in a moment, we see the per-core performance increasing by a large margin this year, driving increased performance, reducing the number of cores customers are going to need because this chip is so much faster than the ones it's likely to replace. And finally, we do see, whether it's driven by the worldwide recession or the desire to get to cloud computing, I can't be 100% certain, but we're seeing a significant increase in the adoption of server virtualization technologies, certainly being used to drive up the average utilization on these servers, which especially on x86 has been particularly low. In the 5 to 10% range is historically what it has been. We're expecting that to increase over the next couple years. But using these virtualization technologies, often coinciding with a server refresh. So in fact, you may see that first trend I mentioned, the number of processor cores per chip doubling in these replacement servers and virtualization technologies being used at the same time in your customer. And of course, it's this adoption of the server virtualization technologies which is really going to drive the adoption of subcapacity licensing. But before we talk about the subcapacity announcements, let's move to slide 4. And one of the questions we get most frequently is why we license to the processor core when so many other vendors in the industry, like Intel and AMD and Microsoft, changed their definition back in 2005. And the first thing you should be sure to tell your customer is that IBM has consistently defined a processor as a core. We never changed our definition, unlike those other vendors. So if you go back in history, as early as the first multi-core chip, which was the IBM Power 4, released back in 2001, we very clearly defined in that announcement letter that the processor was the core. And we've continued this. Of course, you saw that change when Intel and AMD announced multi-core chips. They, of course, can't sell a single processor core on a multi-core chip. They need to sell the entire chip. So I understand why they changed the definition, but it certainly has confused things. So why do we continue to license to the core? Well, it really is the smallest unit in the server that executes the software. And as a result, it's the most granular thing we can license to as a substitute or a surrogate for the value customers are getting from our middleware. And also, by being the most granular, it gives the customer the greatest degree of flexibility to architect their systems in the way it makes the most sense for them. And then another important reason, especially since we're going to talk about server virtualization so much during this call, by licensing to the processor core, it aligns much better with the way the virtualization technologies define virtual CPUs. Most often, a virtual CPU equates to a physical processor core, and so by licensing to the core, we actually make it easier for customers to license in a virtualized environment. Now, we came up with an analogy that we recognize isn't 100% perfect, may not strike you all as the best analogy in the world, but we're trying to look for another way to describe this. So there are sporting events that happen around the world that consist of a number of games. You can think of the World Cup or the Olympics or, in the United States, the NCAA basketball playoff championships, where there's a whole series of games that lead to a champion. And by the way, if you're not a sports fan, think of this as a season ticket to the symphony or the opera. That would work the same way. But how would you feel if you were a fan of a particular team, really only interested in watching that team's games, but the event made you buy tickets for every game in the event? Of course, if you wanted to see them all, that's great, and there will be some of you that would want to see them all. But just as likely, there are many of you who would only be interested in specific games in that series. So if you're forced to buy all the tickets to all the games, you've actually been forced to spend more money than you needed to. Obviously, the optimal route for you in this situation would be to buy the tickets to the specific games you're interested in. And that's what it's like when you license to the processor core instead of to the socket. We're really allowing the customer to license just to those processor cores being used to run the software. It's like attending just the games that you're interested in attending. So hopefully that analogy works a little bit for you, and if it helps your understanding, I'm glad. If it triggers a better idea for an analogy, please let me know. Let's move now to slide 5, and let's talk about the word processor. And you've heard myself and some of my peers talk about this in past calls. It's the fact that that word processor has multiple meanings today, depending on who you're talking to. And I think most often, customers have adopted the definition that Intel or AMD or Microsoft use, which is to define a processor as a socket. But since we define it as a core, and we're really one of the few in the industry that has been consistent in that definition, as I mentioned a couple of slides ago, this makes it possible to have miscommunication or confusion in the communication as you talk. So what we really encourage you to do is not to use the word processor by itself. Make sure you modify it by the particular hardware feature that you are referring to in the particular usage. So when you're talking about our licensing, always say processor core, not just processor. Whole phrase, processor core. However, if it's a situation where the customer is referring to a socket, then define it as a processor socket as opposed to a processor chip or a processor core. And we found that if you can modify your language that way, it cuts down on the misunderstandings that have taken place in some accounts that we've had experience with. Now let's go ahead and move to slide 6 and talk about the first announcement we made back on April 1st. It was the PDU announcement for the latest Intel chip, the one that, as I mentioned, was codenamed the Halon. Now, this is the next generation Intel Xeon multi-core chip. Now, Xeon is spelled X-E-O-N, and it has been the brand name that Intel has been using for their multi-core server chips since 2005. But this new one has a couple things about it that make it a little different. First, it's really the first situation we've had where in huge quantities they're going to be shipping in both dual and quad-core versions. So it'll be some with 2 processor cores per chip and others with 4 processor cores per chip, with, to, from our understanding, the quad-core being the most common version. Now, we do expect that in the next year or two that they will add a 6-core and an 8-core version to that chip. But, of course, that's the future, expected next year or the year after. But they announced this first new Nehalem chip on March 30th and is available for servers that have 1 or 2 sockets. And the real important thing from your customer's point of view is that there is tremendous performance improvement with this particular processor chip. Whether it has 2 processor cores or 4 processor cores on it, the customer will be able to run a significantly larger workload on this chip with these processor cores than they could before. And as a result, we have raised the x86 multi-core PDU just for the Nehalem chip, not for any of the previous Xeons, to 70 PDUs per core. So the old Xeon chips will need 50 PDUs, and this new Xeon, codenamed Nehalem, will need 70 PDUs per core. Before I tell you how to determine which of these processor chips would be in your customer server, let's move to slide 7 and take a look at really what a bargain this PDU rating is for this latest Xeon chip. So there's 3 graphs on this chart. On the leftmost, it shows the performance increase that customers are going to experience on a per-core basis, per processor core, with this new chip. So typically customers keep a server 3 to 4 years. So if you assume that they replace one of the earlier dual-core chips that they made available in late 2005 and in 2006, they're going to see almost a 200% performance improvement on a per-core basis. And, of course, if it was a later Xeon chip, it wouldn't be quite as large, but it is still a very significant performance increase. So the performance increased nearly 200%, while we only increased the PDUs by 40%, so a much smaller increase. What that leads to is good news for the customer, as you see in the graph on the right. When we made the original PVU announcement in 2006, we promised you and we promised our customers that we would give them price performance improvements as they move to new server technologies. And we've certainly done it here, where if you think about the value in the workload being, or the value to the customer being in the workload they're running, they will now, if they move that workload from an old x86 to a new x86, they'll actually be able to run twice as the workload on the same number of processor cores, which effectively means we've cut the price per unit of throughput in half. So just a tremendous price performance improvement with this 70 PVU rating for this new Intel Xeon chip codenamed Nehalem. Now let's talk about how you identify the particular type of x86, type of Xeon chip that's being used in your customer servers on slide 8. What we've had to do is add another piece of information that you need to acquire from your customer to determine the appropriate PVU rating. So at least Intel has made it easier for us in the numbering scheme for their models. So you need to take a look not only whether it's Intel Xeon, but now you'll need to know what model of processor chip is in that server. So let me just outline the general approach Intel takes to their model numbers. If it is a one-socket server, the model number is going to start with a 3. If it is a two-socket server, the model number is going to start with a 5. As I mentioned, it's only one and two-socket servers. They're going to be running this new Nehalem chip for the coming months. But when they do come out with a chip for four-socket or greater servers, we expect that to start with a 7. And then following those first numbers, again, whether it's a 3 for one socket, a 5 for two-socket, or in the future a 7 for four or more sockets, the next three digits in that model number will tell you whether it is a Nehalem processor or not. All of the Nehalem processors, regardless of what that first digit in the model number is, will be in the range of 500 to 599. So for a one socket, it's the entire model number would be 3500 to 3599 if it's a Nehalem processor. If it is outside that range, then it is not Nehalem and means that the PVUs per core would be 50. Of course, if it's in that range, the PVUs per core are 70. And you see an excerpt of the updated PVU table that, as you probably know, can be found on both the internal and the external PVU websites that shows you this model number. So we lay out right in the PVU table and in the other tools that we provided, the processor guide, and in fact a new guide to these models, how to determine the model number. So if you move with me to slide 9, customers really are going to have significant benefits from the new processor core technology from Intel and the new PVU rating from IBM. They are going to be able to see significant performance improvements where they get tremendous price performance improvement in the software. So we continue to scale the value that customers get from our software with the price they have to pay. In fact, they're receiving more value with this new processor core and PVU rating than they had in the past. And the other thing that I mentioned briefly earlier, but gives you a real opportunity to go out and talk to your customers and add some real value, is to make sure that the software planners in your customer are talking to the hardware planners. Most often, hardware planners buy a standard server, either it's a one socket or a two socket or a four socket, whatever it happens to be. Most commonly, though, it's a two socket server. And if they just continue to buy a two socket server and don't pay attention to the number of processor cores on each of those sockets, the software folks could easily see their software costs double or more. So please talk to your customers. Make sure they're linked up and that the hardware folks understand the implications of their replacement strategy on software costs, and make sure your software folks are planning for these servers to come in that have quad-core chips in them as standard. This certainly, if they can't get to virtualization technologies right away, we'll show you another offering we're adding to subcapacity to help them deal with that in the short run. But long-term virtualization technologies is really the right way for your customer to go to take advantage of that extra performance if they don't have single workloads that can utilize all of that capacity. But fundamentally, for any particular workload, customers are now going to require fewer cores, and in most cases, that'll mean fewer PBUs as well. So now let's go ahead and switch over to the subcapacity announcements that we made a week ago Tuesday. And the first of these is on slide 10. And the first announcement, which we think is really quite exciting, is that instead of having a fairly restrictive list of products available for subcapacity licensing, we have now opened up and nearly every single PBU-based product in our portfolio is eligible for subcapacity. There are just a handful that are not, and that tends to be because the product themselves must run in real time. It cannot run in a virtualization technology. It's supporting some real-time or event-driven effort by the customer. But nearly every product is now available for subcapacity licensing. But to do that, it no longer makes sense to keep a special part number for subcapacity deployments as opposed to the full capacity deployments. So we're eliminating the two part number structure. And in fact, that part number that historically we thought of as the full cap number now becomes available for use in both full cap and subcap. Now, if your customer has an existing PBU entitlement, if that's an existing full cap, it can now also be used for subcap as long as the customer agrees to the terms in the subcapacity attachment to the Passport Advantage agreement. If your customer had a subcapacity part number, we're not going to actually change the original entitlement back to full capacity, but when their next subscription and support renewal comes up on or after July 1st, we will convert them automatically from the subcap renewal part number to the full cap renewal part number. Now, as you probably remember, these both full cap and subcap were identical price, so this has no impact on price to the customer at all. But we believe by eliminating the extra part numbers, we simplify ordering, simplify administration for the customer, and eliminate the need for the whole conversion process when customers wanted to change full capacity part number products to their subcapacity equivalent. Now, moving to slide 11, we've also added support for a number of additional virtualization technologies, most of which apply to the x86 marketplace, but a significant expansion over what was already the industry-leading licensing approach for virtualization technologies. So you can see the list here on slide 11. There's one I want to call out specifically, though, and that's the operating system commands and BIOS settings. Remember a few minutes ago I mentioned how customers can easily find themselves in a situation where they have a standard of buying two socket servers, and now that the quad-core chips have become the standard chip in these servers, they see the number of cores double. Well, some of your customers may not have the lead time, or it may not be the right part in their planning to begin implementing virtualization technologies yet. So if they run into this situation, one of the things we've added to the subcapacity licensing offering is for both the Linux and Windows versions that run on these x86 server cores, there are operating system commands and with some server vendors a BIOS command that actually allows them to turn off processor cores. So we are making that eligible for subcapacity so that, for instance, if the customer only replaced the server to cut the server maintenance cost, and that is a key driver for these hardware replacements, and they don't yet have plans to use that extra capacity on day one, they could use these operating system commands or the BIOS settings, if they were available, to turn off all of the additional cores. So before on the two-socket server, they might have had four cores. Now they have eight cores. They can turn off those four additional cores for now And when the time comes that they're ready to implement additional workloads or to add virtualization technology to that server, they can turn those cores back on and use those cores effectively. So we think we have been very sensitive to the problems customers are likely to face here in 2009 and got out ahead of it by offering that additional operating system command as a subcapacity eligible technology. So in addition, we also reconfirmed that we will be providing support in the IBM License Metric tool for VMware in just a few weeks. Now, I might mention that these new technologies that we just added, we know how to add support to the IBM License Metric tool, but that support has not yet been added. We expect that to be done roughly the middle of 2010. In the meantime, once customers have accepted the subcapacity terms, they will need to use the manual license tracking rules that we talk about on both the internal and external websites to track their usage of those technologies until they are supported by ILMT, at which time they will need to add the tracking of ILMT to their operations. Now, with this announcement, we also confirmed that we will be announcing support for the remaining PowerVM virtualization technologies that we issued a statement of direction on last year. Again, at the same time frame, we make VMware available for support within ILMT. So now, almost all the leading technologies and pretty much all the technologies we are having requests for on any kind of regular basis are now supported in our subcapacity offering, which adds additional flexibility to your customers' operations. They can now choose the virtualization technology which best matches their needs and still be ensured that they will be able to get subcapacity licensing and the reduced licensing costs that come with it. So again, we took what was already the industry-leading licensing support for virtualization and made it better. Moving to slide 12, I'm not going to present the whole slide, but we just wanted to remind you there are requirements. Even though there's no additional cost, there are some requirements, starting with that the need to agree to the terms of the subcapacity attachment to the Passport Advantage Agreement. And then you can read the other pieces here, but the final key one being that they need to use the IBM License Metric tool, except in those situations where the tool does not yet support the virtualization technology. And as I mentioned, then they use manual tracking rules until the time that ILMT does support the technology. And then you see a complete list of the technologies supported there on the bottom half of the slide. Now let's talk about that letter we're sending to all Passport Advantage customers. So if you'll move with me to slide 13, we began last week to send these letters going to every Passport Advantage customer, whether they had agreed to the subcapacity terms before or not. And there's really a couple of things we're going to tell them about. First is the highlights of this new subcap announcement, which we've just talked about. The second is that we have updated the subcapacity attachment text, updating the terms and simplifying the terms to match what we now actually currently do. For instance, if you might remember a few years ago, we required customers to register their tool servers and to submit reports to IBM. We eliminated that in the past and have now completely eliminated it from the attachment language so that the language in this latest attachment matches what we have just talked about with the simplified and improved terms. And then finally, it also points the customers to our both PBU and subcapacity websites where they can get the latest information. I should mention, by the way, if your customer agreed to the terms of the subcap attachment after September of 2008, they should be okay. They should have the latest terms. If they haven't, if they signed that or agreed to those terms prior to September of 2008, these new terms that we're notifying them in this letter become effective 90 days after we've notified them. Now, we think it's important that you all be able to see what is in that letter. So if you go, again, to the subcapacity licensing webpage, and you can go to either the internal or the external page, it doesn't matter, on the right-hand side under Essential, there's a link to subcapacity licensing attachments. And if you go to that page, in addition to all of the subcapacity attachments that are available by language, and near the top of the page, with a blue background, you're going to see the April 2009 customer notification letters link. If you click on that link, it will take you to all the letters, and when I say all the letters, it's one letter, but again, all the translations of that letter that were used around the world. So that's how you can see the letter that is going to your customer, and if you would like, you can print out a copy and take it there yourself. That's your call, but the folks who are identified as the Passport Advantage coordinators for your customer sites will be receiving this letter. Now I'd like to shift gears, move to slide 14, and talk about some advantages we've got over Oracle, obviously one of our major competitors in both the data and the WebSphere spaces. So they made an announcement recently which was quite interesting. They had had a structure which looked a little bit like our PBU, but required this thing called a processor factor. So you had to take the number of processor cores, and then you had to multiply that by this processor factor to figure out how many Oracle licenses you were going to need. And what they have done is retroactively, they have increased the number of licenses needed if your customer is running on a Power6 processor core or a System Z10 processor core. Both IBM systems, so that would be the Power6 in the Power Systems line, and of course Z10 being the latest generation of the System Z processors. They've increased the licensing requirements by one-third. Again, it appears to be retroactive. The trade press has asked Oracle to confirm that. The fact that they haven't wanted to talk about it clearly indicates that they really do intend to increase this retroactively. Now, the other thing that's interesting when you look at them competitively is with the introduction of this Xeon Nehalem chip from Intel, they're also requiring customers to identify the processor chip model number, just as we talked about, to identify whether the particular server your customer deployed was a 50 PBU or a 70 PBU version of Xeon. So they also are requiring the processor model numbers. Now, they haven't raised their processor factor for Nehalem yet, but as we've just seen, they seem to like to get customers to use the new technology and then come and retroactively increase their licensing, and we suspect that may be exactly what they're planning to do for Nehalem. The other area we have a tremendous advantage just through our licensing structure is in support for virtualization technologies. I've already told you we have the most extensive support in the industry. Oracle has a very limited support for virtualization technologies. Other than their own Oracle VM, which is a form of Xen, they only support hard partitioning technologies, so those built into the hardware, which excludes all of VMware, for instance, and all of Microsoft's Hyper-V. So all the virtualization technologies you'd find on x86 are pretty much out unless you want to use their own version of virtualization technology. Now, of course, they'll tell your customers they can get that Oracle VM for free. What they're not as upfront about is the fact that there is a substantial support cost annually needed to use that tool. And I just want to reinforce this. On the IBM side, our tool, we don't have any of our own virtualization technologies, but the tool we offer for free, and our subscription and support is also free. So no cost from our side at all. Oracle have significant support costs for their tool. And, of course, this is all on top of the fact that at a list price basis, they were already significantly more expensive than we were. And let's explore that just a little more on slide 15. This uses a Power6 example, a Power Systems P570 with four processor cores on it. And as you can see in the first two columns, the licenses required through their processor factor by cores has gone up by a factor of 33%, one-third, meaning the total number of licenses needed for this particular server has increased from three licenses to four. And as you can see on the bottom line, we already had a cost advantage over Oracle at list price. Now we're nearly or only about two-thirds of the cost. They're nearly 50% higher than we are on a list price cost basis. And if we move to slide 16, I just want to emphasize what the Oracle's limited virtualization support will mean for your customer. We know that VMware is the most commonly deployed virtualization technology in the marketplace today. So on this particular chart, you see essentially the same server running the same customer workload. The one on the left, they've deployed it using WebSphere. On the right, they've used Oracle's WebLogic. So with our subcapacity licensing, when you look on the left, the customer can use subcapacity licensing and only has to license for the two processor cores that are actually running that virtual machine with WebSphere inside it. However, because Oracle doesn't support soft partitioning technologies, they don't support VMware, even though the customer is only ever going to use two processor cores, they require the customer to license for all eight cores on the server. Going back to that analogy I mentioned before, we're letting the customer license for the individual games they want to attend. Oracle's saying you've got to buy the whole season no matter what. Doesn't matter whether you can attend the game or not. So that really wraps up the brief Oracle comparison. I want to move on so we leave time for questions and answers. So let me summarize on page 17. Intel introduced a new processor core called Xeon. This is the one that was codenamed the Halem. Has a really significant performance improvement at a hardware level, and we've given it just a tremendous software price performance improvement with a 70 PBU rating, where in fact, on a workload throughput perspective, customers actually see their costs cut in half. On subcapacity, we've now expanded so that essentially our entire PBU-based portfolio is available for subcapacity offering. We've reduced the complexity of ordering and administering this and eliminated the need for conversions by adopting a single part number structure. And we have added a significant number of virtualization technologies to our support. So again, we've extended the lead we already had in supporting virtualizations. And again, I want to emphasize that before your customer can take advantage, even though there's a single part number and even though these products are now supported in subcapacity, they still must agree to the subcap terms that they see in the attachment, which includes the use of the IBM license metric tool. And following this, you'll see two charts with links, the first having some key internal websites that we think you should have handy, and the second having the equivalent external websites that you can give to your customer so they can read about these announcements or the overall PBU or subcapacity structure in general. And, of course, for those looking to deploy subcapacity licenses, they'll most likely have questions about the IBM license metric tool, so we've included a link there as well. And with that, I'd like to wrap it up. And, Brendan, if you'd be so kind as to open it for questions.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, to ask a question, please press star, then 1 on your telephone keypad. A voice prompt on your phone line will indicate when your line is open to ask your question. Please state your name before posing it. Once again, please press star 1 at this time. And we'll take our first question from Brent Breeden.
Hi, thank you. I just had a quick question for clarification. With the elimination of the dual part numbers for subcapacity, does that mean we're now opening up virtualization options across all IBM PVU products?
Again, with the exception of, I think it's two or three, I don't have the exact number at my fingertips, but essentially, yes, everything. So that we had a lot of customers who were looking for Tivoli products, for instance, to be supported. Those have now all been opened up to subcapacity licensing.
That's great. Thank you.
You're welcome, Brent.
And we'll move on to our next question from Bill Farmer.
Hey, Bill.
Yeah, this is Bill Farmer out in Cincinnati. Can you repeat the date that you said that the ILMT support would be available for VMware? I think you said in a couple weeks.
It's going to be mid-year. If I had to guess, I haven't seen any final dates, but I would guess the July-ish time frame, could be August, but mid-year. Third quarter.
Okay.
I think we can. If I were to tell a customer, I'd tell them third quarter with confidence. I think it's going to be July or August, but let's say third quarter just to be safe.
Okay, so I'll just tell them no later than the end of third quarter.
Right.
Great, thanks.
We'll take our next question from Mark Bovita.
Hey, Mark.
Hello, it's Mark Bovita here from the UK. I was just looking at the example that you gave when a customer replaces a dual processor server with the old processor core at 50 PVUs per core. It needs currently 100 PVUs. If he replaces that server with a quad core with a new Xeon processor and only activate or deactivate two processor cores, so only runs two processor cores in total, each of these new processor cores will require 70 PVUs per core, which is 140 PVUs in total. So effectively what we're doing is when a customer replaces a dual processor server with a new server with a new Xeon chip, then he needs to buy 40% more PVUs for running the same number of processors.
That would be true if you look at a number of cores to number of cores. But again, make sure your customer evaluates it from a workload perspective. Because these new cores have so much more performance in them, there is a very good chance, but of course we can't absolutely commit that this would happen, but a very good chance they'd actually only need one core to run that new workload. And in fact, it would end up being a savings of 30 PVUs. So before it was 100, now it would only be 70 required, and they could turn off three of those cores temporarily, or of course, put in virtualization technologies and take advantage of them on other workloads. That's what we expect to see for the vast majority of workloads out there. But of course, there may be a handful where, given the way they were architected and they had driven higher utilization on the old dual core, it is possible that they would see the PVUs increase as you described.
Okay, but in that case, they would use more capacity anyway, so that's where the justification lies.
Yes, but by adding the operating system commands to turn off those cores, though, we've protected them from having to pay for the entire four cores until they're ready to use them.
Okay. And the second question is, effectively, all customers who have bought Tivoli, I work for Tivoli, and license the full machines, are not going to have a whole lot of free licenses to deploy under subcapacity because these licenses are not valid under subcapacity. So that's going to give them an awful lot more licenses to use with virtualized environments.
You're correct. That is a possibility. And, in fact, that has been the argument we have been using for years with the product teams as to why they needed to support subcapacity very early so they didn't overstuff the customer with licenses. And it is an issue that we are aware of and working with the sales management to try and help you develop some strategies that we hope to bring to light in a few weeks to help deal with those situations. But yes, it is a possibility.
Yeah, I think, for a lot of my customers, that means they're going to have an overcapacity of licenses now.
Which is
difficult, makes it difficult for me to sell anymore and for them to renew.
You're right, that's a possibility, Mark. And it's actually the same reason that we've been encouraging account teams to talk to their customers about subcapacity licensing. I've been involved in a few in the last couple months. I expect my peers have as well, where customers have just never broached the subject of subcapacity licensing with their customer. They've continued to sell them full capacity, and now in other parts of the product line, they're faced with this again. So unfortunately, there's no perfect time since the water's already over the dam to do this where we can make it pain-free for you, but we're trying to do it as early as possible to minimize continuing to add to this problem over time.
Okay.
So it would be a smaller problem dealing with it today than it would be if we waited 2 or 3 years to deal with it.
Okay. The other thing is the condition. I've had a lot of issues with my customers recently about these. And two issues that are remaining is that the ILMT tool, which is part of the condition to use capacity licensing, will require and does require from customers, non-insignificant investment in hardware skills and maintenance support for running it. So do we plan to have a packaged offering which minimizes disruption for them to deploy this tool?
Well, we do have a quick start services offering that is available, and you can find out information about it off of the subcapacity website, so that there are ways if the customer wants to get it in with some assistance where they have someone standing beside them, helping them deploy it, get the agents out on the first handful of servers. It's a low-cost offering, just a few days. That's a great way to do it, to get them started. But you also, the customer also needs to remember there's tremendous value in the subcapacity offering, given the fact they don't have to license to as many processor cores as before. Therefore, we're saving them a lot of money. And yes, we do have this additional requirement to use ILMT, but in fact, from some of our experience, we save customers a great deal by using the tool if they get into an audit situation, because they'll have much more confidence that they are licensed correctly, they are in compliance, where in fact we're finding in most of the audits these days, because of virtualization technologies, the average customer with no tools is out of compliance, and then it becomes a very painful, very difficult situation.
Okay. And last one, sorry about all these questions, but they really come up every other day with customers. You said there is a manual process to monitor these subcapacity license utilization. What is this manual process? I'm only aware of the ILMT tool.
Sure. Mark, if you take a look on the subcapacity website, again, both internal or external, there's a link to how to count the number of cores in the different virtualization technologies. And on that page, they have a link of how you count cores in VMware and PowerVM, et cetera.
Okay.
They also there have the rules for the manual tracking. Essentially, we say to a customer, you are responsible, well, the customer is responsible according to the terms of the agreement. They're responsible for being in compliance. So what we do is show them the information they need to find, and whether they want to do that through operator commands or some other tool that they happen to have installed, we don't care, but they need to track that information, record it in an Excel spreadsheet, and again quarterly, just like we do with ILMT, and then save that manual record for a minimum of 2 years.
Okay, thank you.
I think Carlos just wanted to jump in and add a little piece on one of your earlier questions, Mark. So, Carlos, why don't you come on in?
Hey, Mark. What I wanted to say was two things about your excess entitlement concern. The first thing I wanted to say was by moving to subcapacity licensing, right, what we're doing is avoiding excess entitlements going forward, right, because excess entitlements are a big risk to our business. I mean, they're a risk in your customer situation even without subcapacity licensing. You know, if a customer has excess entitlements, they could always buy, you know, two smaller servers and use, you know, the number of entitlements that, you know, half the entitlements, you know, that they needed, really, really needed on one server and the excess entitlements on the other server, right? And in that way, not buy any licenses, right? So one of the key points to, you know, subcapacity licensing, which is to sell customers the capacity they need, is to avoid those excess entitlements. That's a big problem. If you're not safe today is really the key point.
Okay, thank you.
Yep.
Also, Mark, while Carlos was talking, Steve pinged me the name of the contact in the UK for the ILMT Quick Start, and it's Whipple Shaw.
Yeah, I know Whipple. Thank you.
Okay.
Great. Thanks a lot.
Sure.
Okay, we'll take our next question from Peter Grulich.
Hey, Peter.
Hey, thanks. And by the way, I support the Tivoli Salesforce worldwide, so, you know, my perspective is kind of seeing problems at a worldwide perspective that are brought to me by the reps. And first of all, thank you for getting the subcapacity pricing in. You probably heard the cheers worldwide when that happened, so thank you. First question is, micro, how do you handle micro-partitioning under this? With AIX, you can get one-tenth of a processor. How can we handle that?
Sure. It's a good question, Peter. Micro-partitioning has been available for a number of years, primarily on the Power 5, Power 6, so System P, System I, Power Systems. And what that means is that instead of dedicating an entire processor core to a particular partition or LPAR, you can have fractions as small as 1/10. Actually, the fractions can go smaller, but the operating system licenses go in 1/10 increments. And what we do is we add up all the fractional cores used across a particular server for a product. So if you were to say now that it's Tivoli Storage Manager, since you're with Tivoli, Peter will pick something like TSM. You add up those fractions across all the partitions running TSM on that server. And in the end, once you've added those across the servers, if that does not add up to a whole number, you then round it up to the next whole number. So that if you had 10 partitions, each running 2/10 of a processor core, you know, you would add them across, and that would, of course, equal two processor cores in total, and that's the number you need a license to on that server.
Okay. So, in essence, we're licensing to physical processors is what you're saying?
That's correct.
Okay. So we've gone from licensing for physical processor cores in a server to basically licensing to physical processor core for micro-partitioning.
Yeah, it's the logical physical equivalent, if you will.
Okay, so we'd still have a problem with excess capacity if going forward, if customers have 10 partitions running 10 separate instances, we'd still have to charge them for 10, and if all of them were 10 different cases, we'd have to charge them for 10 cores, basically, right?
That is the standard terms and conditions, yes.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
you'll find out. You can find out more information about this on that web page I mentioned that talks about how to determine the right number of cores. There's a Power VM deck in there, and you'll find information about micro-partitioning on slide 10.
Okay, good. Now to kind of set up for what we're seeing within Tivoli is we don't compete, you know, that directly with Oracle. Our competition is HP, BMC, CA, and Microsoft. And this question just kind of goes, are you seeing this problem? Since I support the world worldwide, I've had 3 calls from 3 banks in Canada, 2 calls from reps from our largest banks in the U.S., several calls from banks in Germany, and a call from a bank in Japan. And the problem is with the standardization of the quad core. I'll say our bread and butter, which is retail banking, retail distribution, and it involves any remote site where you have a server that's doing, you know, limited function. It's supporting a branch office. And to give you an example, one of our products, just to monitor a database at one of those remote sites, is $12,000 for a quad core. Now, I can get that in a data center. I can't get that at a remote site. And HP, BMC, CA, and Microsoft is eating our lunch up because they have gone to a tiered server pricing, and it's just killing us because the customer is looking at us and saying, guys, I'm forced to go to quad cores. I am not going to get the productivity out of those cores. I need a better price. And it's hurting us bad. Are you hearing that? Are you seeing it? And, you know, what can we do and what can you do and what are your plans to fix that?
We have heard that before, Peter. And the first thing, and of course we're going to change a little bit here in 2009 as quad-core really becomes the standard. It was not a standard prior to the Nehalem chip, although it was available. Not that it helps you now, but what we used to say in the past is you're not forced by a quad-core. You have dual-core options available. You're just choosing not to do that. So if you don't need the capacity, why are you putting extra cores out there anyway? Now that Nehalem is becoming the common Intel chip this year, that's what really drove us to offer those operating system commands so that they can turn those extra cores off. And if your customer says, but I need those extra cores, then they ought to be paying for the value of it. But if they're saying, I just was forced to go to them in a hardware replace scenario, you can say through our subcapacity licensing, you can turn those off and you don't have to worry about the cost of them.
And I understand, and first of all, that's not real world because Intel's discounting the 4 cores so deeply that customers are being driven to that just by hardware pricing. So, you know, that's not real world. The second one is about, you know, going in and turning everything off. That adds management overhead to the problem. Customers really just want to roll out servers and not be concerned with, you know, tweaking the hardware to align with compliance. And I'll go back again. We're not competing with Oracle. We're competing with HP, BMCC, and Microsoft that don't lay that management overhead on top of them. And I appreciate it. I just want to raise it up. I didn't want to have a long discussion here, but I wanted to tell you that our best and largest customers that have 10 to 20,000 remote sites, when this hits them, we're losing deals. And we're losing to Microsoft, we're losing to BMC, we're losing to HP based on, you know, failure to address the retail distribution space. Does that make sense?
It does. We have heard it before, and there has been a number of meetings on it. We don't have a perfect answer for you yet, but yes, we are aware of it.
Okay. And if I have these problems and I start to see it and get complaints from customers, can I pass those on to you so that you feel my pain?
Please do. I mean, and it is through those kinds of market insights that lead us to evolve the product, as you see through the operating system commands.
Okay, great. Thanks. And my only comment there is don't wait too long, because if you wait as long as it took for us to fix up capacity, we're going to lose a lot of deals. The last one is just PVU pricing in general and its impact on general business. And hopefully you've heard this one too. In general business, we've lost three deals. And at the CIO level in general business, they're saying, look, I'm going to have to hire a headcount to manage my IBM compliance, and this is my job that's at risk, and this is the CIO. The Intel server environment is high turnover. It's high, you know, it's just they can't keep track of their Intel servers. And then we come in to audit them, and we say they're out of compliance. And when we go in with initial deals, we may have won the deal all the way up to the point where we try to explain to them our pricing model. And at the CIO level, I'm not talking about some grunt, they go, I would have to hire a headcount because I need to be ensured that I'm in compliance because my job depends on that. And this is just rooted in the PVU pricing and how we do it. And once again, HP, BMC, CA, and Microsoft don't do that. And we're having problems in general business with that.
Okay, this is the first specifically I'm hearing about this. There may have been some of my teammates that have, but my initial response, if I were talking to that customer and the CIO raised it to me, would be, you have the same compliance issues with all four of those other vendors and any others you have in the shop, and two of those I know of from past experience, CA and Microsoft, can both get pretty ornery when it comes to an audit, and both have more aggressively been using audits. I'm not certain whether HP or BMC have. I haven't heard anything specifically about them. But in fact, this is a question of whether you want to address the issue now before you've gone over the cliff with a problem, or you're willing to wait, because I guarantee you that if you think you're having some compliance issues with IBM, you're having the same issues with HP, BMC, CA, and Microsoft. And you may be choosing to not address the situation now, but it would require the same headcount to address it with them, only they don't offer you the tools to make it easier. We at least give you a tool for free that allows you to be fairly sure that you're in compliance.
And my point is they don't need a tool with HP, BMC, CA, and Microsoft, because they have a tiered, at least Microsoft is per server. HP, BMC, and CA, HP and BMC for sure, have gone to a tiered server pricing where all you have to do is look at the server and say 4 cores, I know exactly what the price is, 8 cores, 4 to 8. And we have to come in and go PVUs, assign PVU quantity per core, and the customers have to figure that out. Let me tell you, the CIOs look at it and say, everybody's getting ornery about compliance. These are down times, but it's a whole lot easier to do that just up front before I buy it, just spreadsheet. I can see that it's easier with HP.
Okay, well,
so
Peter,
I appreciate the comments. I just wanted to be sure I need to pass these on for Actively reps and what we're seeing so that you hear it, because when you said you don't hear it, we're seeing it everywhere in the general business.
I appreciate it. It sounds like it's probably a good topic for us to address the next time we do a set of worldwide calls. So
right.
I do appreciate you bringing it up.
Okay, thanks. I'm done. I just wanted to make sure you hear what I'm hearing every day. And by the way, again, thanks for the subcapacity pricing. I wish we could have been, you know, a little bit faster in the brand adopting it, but I really appreciate you guys doing the work to get it out. Okay?
You're welcome.
Thanks.
We'll take our next question from Eddie Comerford.
Hey, Eddie.
Hi. Eddie Comerford, IBM Software Group in the UK. My colleague Mark Pervida actually asked my question, but I'll add a little bit to it. I've got a live customer in the UK who signed up to Subcapacity in February and took 4 of our service days to help them get the license metric tool installed last week. So they've done that, and they got it installed in 3 of their boxes. Just to echo Mark's point, it was fairly heavy investment in time to get it. I think they thought it was going to be lighter. I understand there's benefits there, but they've got over 2,000 boxes to install that on. So I guess I need to look at the Quick Start services or some other offering to help them along there. And just to add on to that, does the 90-day rule still apply, i.e. from when you sign up to Subcapacity terms, you've got 90 days to get the license metric tool in and working?
The terms still assume that they'll get the tool in and working. Absolutely. Now, you know, if they're trying to get it done in the window and they're going to run a couple days over, we could certainly give an exception for a couple of days if, you know, they need just a few extra days to get that done because of the volume of servers.
Sure.
But, you know, we're not trying to be inflexible on the thing. But, yes, they need to fundamentally get it working.
Okay. And have we done it for customers, or have we helped customers to see them do it on the sort of 2,000 to 3,000 server type level?
Steve, I'm not as familiar.
I don't know it at that level of detail to know whether we've done it there, but we have had, you know, successful installations, several customers.
Yeah, I'm sure of hundreds. I'm not sure of thousands.
Okay,
Eddie.
All right, I'll let you know how we get on.
Okay, thank you.
We'll take our next question from William Lopez.
Hi, William.
Hey, how are you? This is Will Lopez from Florida area in USA. And the question I have is it's three parts to it. One is from a Tivoli perspective, there is always an opportunity to use this announcement to better sell my product. But I deal in general business, and the coordination of this announcement to the resources that I would need, such as configuration, for minimum configuration to be used for remote branches in the example that you were using with TSM earlier. Those kinds of numbers, as well as phone numbers for the customers who I will not be able to see on a daily basis, and who may have questions about how they can better utilize this announcement to buy IBM. Are those references available to us in some form, both the text lines and the eCares, Passport Advantage type phone numbers for references, and are they ready to receive the number of phone calls that are going to be coming their way? That's part A of my question.
And on that part A, I can't guarantee they're ready, but we're doing everything we can. We had pre-announcement calls with them. We are continuing, in fact, a little later today. We're having a call with some of those constituents you mentioned. So we are doing everything we can to get them ready. Hopefully they are.
Okay. The second part of my question is to the point of the CIO adding a headcount to manage licenses. I've had the experiences in managing many different pricing models coming out of IBM for different iterations of our products. And right now, one of the things that I have struggled with is that the field is really not ready to become a computing center for the number of customers that have these questions. So your help is appreciated here as well. In light of ELAs and evolution part numbers that have already created some of the pains for customers that are trying to stay on top of how to pay for what they have and not knowing how to do that in some cases.
Okay, I'm not certain there was a question in there other than we're hearing
the evolution
about the volumes.
Yeah, the evolution part numbers, are they involved and already part of this whole you mentioned Subcapacity and normal part numbers, but there's also the old part numbers that are from the previous announcements that were 2006 announcements. Is all this coming together as a competency that a customer can just call up and put their case on the table, and some assistance will be given to the customer on the same phone call as they deal with these questions?
If you mean the old subcap part numbers, that's what I'm not exactly certain what you mean by the evolutionary. If you mean the old subcap part numbers, like I said, we are trying to train everybody.
Right. Now,
in this world, I can't guarantee that they all came to the training, but we've certainly made it available.
So let me try, Roger. I think,
sure.
Well, with respect to evolutions, I think Roger, you know, explained that if a customer has subcapacity PVU part numbers, then at their next anniversary, if the anniversary date is on or after July 1st, 2009, then the quote that they will get will present them with full capacity PVU part numbers as part of their renewal process. That same type of evolution took place 2.5 years ago or so when we introduced PVUs. Customers who had per processor SNS entitlements would have evolved to PVU SNS entitlements at, you know, their anniversary date, renewal dates. Is that what you're asking, Will?
Yes. And then the last part of it is the terabyte-based pricing products that are out there don't seem to be affected by this announcement. Is that correct?
Correct.
All right. Thank you so much. We want to work with our customers. We don't know every customer that has a problem, and I just realized that I couldn't close some business in first quarter because of this letter that I didn't know was sent out. So, you know, the communication coordination, anything that we can do to improve that is appreciated.
Right. And just so we're clear, the letter, you know, was sent out in April, not in 1Q.
But the people that were processing the orders and the tier one distribution channel, they would not process if the order was came in on April 1st until they had a letter signed, which took a few extra days to explain the letter and have the letter signed.
Are you talking about the subcap attachment?
Yes.
Okay, so you sold them subcap but didn't get the subcap attachment signed.
I sold them a license, but there was a letter that they had to sign after the fact that I didn't know was coming.
There's no letter that was required to be signed.
My suspicion is this is one of those things, if we could delve into the details offline.
We'll do that.
Be happy to deal with it and see where the problem was, and if there's something we can fix, we'll do that.
I think it's behind us now, but thank you very much.
Sure, Will.
Thank you.
All right, and as a reminder to the audience, if you have a question at this time, please press star 1. And it appears we have no further questions.
Well, I'd like to thank you all for taking the time to join the call today. If for any reason there's parts of it you'd like to review, this recording as well as the other two calls we did in the last 24 hours will be put up on the internal subcap page. And the final thing I want to point you to, when you take a look at that seller resource section on the internal subcap page, down at the bottom it has a section called Ask a Question. So if you get in a situation where you can't find the answer to your subcap question anywhere else through the normal resources, whether it's TechLine or your Passport Advantage consultant, there is an email address there that you can send your questions to. We'll try to get them resolved just as quickly as possible so that we don't slow down your sell cycle at all. So again, with that, we thank you once again for participating in today's call and hope you have a great day.
That does conclude our call for today. Thank you for your participation, and once again, have a good day.